I was a bit concerned when I thought about taking this service because it's rather strange, actually, in some ways. Being an elder at Warrnambool Church, for example, one of the things I've liked to do is, because we put down a record who took the service and then what the title was, and I sometimes used to say to Judy or Ross or Rex, they were the elders then, what was the title of last week's service or the service before? You know what? Most of them had troubles remembering, which is pretty terrible, isn't it? And perhaps you might find that, I don't know, but it was that, I think it was the 12th or 13th of June when I took a service here last. The next day, I actually went to the singles thing and met Christina. It's rather interesting. And then it's the beginning of this year, which is virtually a bit over 6 months, and I'm taking this service, and I'm just hoping you won't remember too much of the last one, yet you might, because there's going to be some of the content of the same in that, but from a different perspective, perhaps, in some respects. Okay. I've entitled this service, actually, from a quote from the Servant of the Lord. And it's a quote that comes from, I'm not sure whether it's the testimonies or some of her writings, and it states this, and I found it in a Sabbath school lesson about 10 years ago. The second coming of Christ will come upon the world as an overwhelming surprise. Notice that. The second coming of Christ will come upon the world as an overwhelming surprise. They will not be expecting it. They're not ready for it. They're not looking for it. And we ask ourselves, why would that be the case? Well, there's so many other things, but I want to deal with that a bit, but I want to deal with something else in connection with it. I want to ask the question, what of the church of which you and I belong to and its members? Will that be the same outlook? We hope not, and certainly shouldn't be, by any stretch of the imagination. And when I was at Warrnambool, I took this service just last week, and we have a number of new people there, and especially for them, and it should be of significance to us. Now, I'm looking back, firstly, to when I first came into the church. Now, I was, thanks to an exclusive brethren boy, I came to a first confrontation about the faith of God. I didn't have a clue before that. That was in 1958. And when I came into the church, I noticed a number of things when I first came in. There was great preaching at that time. There was a lot of emphasis on prophecy, especially about the second coming. And this is where I'm talking back, 1958, 1960s, early that way. And the members, I felt, were more earnest, more committed. They were people known as the people of the book. Sometimes doubt that these days. Now I notice a big change. Not so much emphasis in preaching as there was of the type of preaching either. It seems to be more of a laxness, more of a slackness. We seem to be a bit more worldly, lacking that closeness, cohesion, commitment, sacrifice, and it seems to be a feeling of self-satisfaction. In fact, I get the impression almost that has come into the church that there's a feeling of the Lord has delayed his coming. Well, you would say so. This is nearly, it's over 1958, 1960. You've got 50 years since that was the, you know, when I was talking about in the past. And I wonder sometimes, and I ask myself, what is the situation? Now, what of the rest of the world? Now, if we come back to the days of Christ, his first coming, was there a people supposedly ready to proclaim his first coming? Was there? Who were they? The Jewish people, weren't they? And especially the leaders were supposed to be are making it clear that the Messiah was soon to come. They had Daniel 9, they should have known the times, and they did actually know something near about the times that Christ was to come. But were they ready for him? They weren't ready for him. Far from ready for him. And they were unprepared. And yet there were people that were prepared, but unfortunately, the great majority of the Jews were not really prepared for Christ's first coming. When I look at Christianity today, and I'm talking about the world church, I'm not just talking about us as a people, I'm talking about there's some 2 billion supposedly Christians in the world today. And do you hear from the pulpits of the land, whether you go to the United States, whether you go to Europe, whether you go to South Africa, whether you go to Australia, New Zealand, or South America, do you hear much concerning the second coming of Christ? You might, especially among smaller groups in the United States, you will find that. But generally speaking, no. And I just wonder, the church, Christianity, 2 billion people, great number of them, are totally unprepared for the second coming of Christ. And they were supposed to be the people who should be actually at the forefront of it. And it just makes me wonder. The trouble is with the group who are speaking about the second coming of Christ, and there are a number of them in the United States, they have had a wrong understanding of it. But at least they're thinking about it. They're in this set of attitude of preparedness. Unfortunately, they believe in a secret rapture. That all of a sudden, one day, all the Christians of the world will disappear. Those who are ready for it will disappear from the face of the earth. Then it will be up to the Jews to convert the rest of the world. Very confusing belief. But what we find in the Western world, and I'm thinking of them in particular, we find a total unpreparedness. We have a consumer society that's secular, it's little interest in eternal things or religious things, and they're living for this world alone. And they will be definitely unprepared for the overwhelming surprise of Christ's second coming. Other religions are usually opposed to Christianity. I'm thinking of Islam, Buddhism, that just to mention just a few. Now, we have the word of prophecy. All right. New Testament emphasizes the second coming. Daniel and Revelation tell us what is going to happen in advance. And we know that. And I might have emphasized this last time. If it's possibly if I asked you, could you remember what I talked about last time, you'd possibly say, well, what did he say? I don't remember. Okay, all right, okay. Okay, we have Revelation 14, and we know that Revelation 14 speaks of the three angels' messages, the last messages to go to the world. And we wonder just what is its impact. And we hear a lot in our own circles about the first angel. Hear a lot about that. The worship of the Creator, which is a seventh-day Sabbath. The fact of judgment has already begun. This is the everlasting gospel, the same gospel that was preached back in the time before Noah and whatnot. But we don't hear much about the second and third angels' messages. Babylon is fallen, and the third angel, which speaks of worship the beast, those who worship the beast and the consequences for so doing, which is still future because that has not yet happened to particular individuals until the very last days. All right. We know that that is the message for what God has. And then in Revelation 13, it tells us that what God tells us to beware of. The emphasis of those powers that Satan will use in the last days. And there's two powers, and we know of the two of them if you read Revelation 13. I think we should know them very specifically, but at the same time, we ought to be aware of what they're going to do or have done. The first beast, if you've Revelation 13, you've read it possibly before. If I'm going over stuff that you've heard before, I'm not going to try and emphasize it until what I want to say. And you think that I'm forgetting about saying, well, the world, what will happen to the world will come as a surprise about Christ's second coming. The first beast, a historical beast, is known as a great persecutor. And then it receives a deadly wound. And we know what that deadly wound was about. And that deadly wound was basically about the fact that that power had suffered such to a degree that it now could not persecute. And we knew that that started at 1798. Okay, approximately. It actually started 50 years before that or more. But it failed to become a persecutor. It was not able to. And if you read Revelation 17, you get the same picture of the woman, and she's riding these beasts, and she has, this cup in her hand, all the abominations of the earth, and she's called Babylon, mother of harlots, and all the abominations of the earth. But the picture in Revelation 17 takes us down to our day, not to the day of John, the Revelator, where these beasts that the woman rides, the woman's still there, but she's not in control of the beasts, or the beast is not using her. And that is the present particular stage. And that's the same as saying that has received the deadly wound. It's speaking about the same basic power. But Revelation 13 tells us in that first beast that it will again receive its power to persecute. The second beast, and again we know what that power is, and I don't need to tell you, it refers to the nation, the land of liberty, the United States of America. And it tells us that that one beast will one day turn to become a persecutor. It will speak as a dragon. Now, when I came into the church, some rather interesting things took place. And those things that took place were just a precursor to what would happen in these two powers. In 1957, before I even had any interest in religion, there was a significant event that took place that shocked America. I don't know whether any of you remember. How many of you remember Sputnik? The satellite Sputnik that the Russians put into space shocked America. They couldn't believe that the Russians would be ahead of them. And that really started a space race and a war race, in a sense. Then in 1958, there was an election of a new man in white called John the 23rd. Rather interesting. A totally different type of Pope, John the 23rd. And he initiated Vatican II. That was rather interesting. That was when I was just coming into the church. In 1960, there was another big strange event, was the election of John F. Kennedy. Do any of you remember what the furore was about? Why that people were afraid of John F. Kennedy being elected? Because he was the first Catholic to be elected to the United States as president. And among Protestants, there was great fear that what he would do. It's just rather interesting, isn't it? These two powers mentioned there just sort of coming into the church. Now, at that particular time, from Sputnik onwards, you have the USSR rivaling the United States. And this was when we have the Cold War. But things were going to change dramatically. How many of you remember the Vietnam War? Most of us. It was a humiliating time for the United States to be humiliated by a small nation, Vietnam. And at the same time, the first beast was considered impotent by the USSR. Even way before that, it was no one other than Stalin. In one statement, he said, "How many divisions does the Church of Rome have?" In other words, he was mocking it. In other words, how many soldiers do you have? You're nothing. who I not the least bit caring of you. But this was going to change, and I mentioned this last time. In 1978 and 1980, two significant people came on the scene who would change things considerably. I wonder if any of you remember what happened in 1978. Perhaps I'm asking too much. In 1978, that's right, a certain man in white called John Paul was elected to the chair of Rome. This man, that's 78, remember? He invigorates his church throughout the world. He becomes recognized by world leaders as a dynamic leader himself. And they take particular notice of him as he travels from place to place, and he has an agenda. He was elected. We don't know whether that was predestined to this, but he was elected very purposely. And his aim was to crush the USSR and its power. That was his aim. Now you might say, what has this got to do with my faith? Well, it's got a lot to do with it in a sense. And then in 1980, another man was elected to the second beast, Ronald Reagan, President of the United States. And interestingly, he saw how the United States had been so degraded and humiliated by the Vietnam War, he was determined to bring America back to the preeminent nation, and he called the other, the USSR, the Axis of Evil, if you remember rightly. And he was determined to also crush the power of the USSR. And it was interesting that in the next decade, between 1980 and 1990, these two men set about to do this. Ronald Reagan, of course, finished in 88, but then at the same time. And I don't know whether you've studied the history of those events, but in Poland, John Paul set about setting up Lech Wałęsa and the Solidarity Movement to bring about the overthrow of the communist regime in Poland itself. And that was the start. Ronald Reagan set about establishing in America some of the most technologically advanced weapons that the USSR could not beat. And that was Star Wars, was just one of the things. And also to beat it economically, to bring it down. Now, John Paul started this emphasis as well as a number of other things, but he was wanting to use Poland as a test case. And Brezhnev, who was in charge of, who was the president of the USSR at the time, and he said to General Jaruzelski, who was in charge of Poland, he said, if you don't deal with this man, we'll have the collapse of Poland. And exactly that's what happened. It wasn't only Poland that collapsed. As we know, from 1989 to 91, the whole Eastern Bloc, the whole communist system in the USSR and the satellite states collapsed, including the Berlin Wall. Now that was interesting, because what did that do? It brought about, first, the first power is in great prominence. He has brought about, helped to bring about, the collapse of the USSR. And Ronald Reagan also has helped to bring his nation, the second beast, into prominence, greatest prominence, throughout the world. Revelation 13. Interesting. The USA is now no doubt the most powerful military nation on earth, still is. John Paul and his church, he headed, has now dramatically boosted itself onto the world stage. Revelation 13. Now you've got to be wary of these things sometimes. But when there's proceedings like these and happenings like these, they're also, when we come to a seemingly to a peak, they're also often turns out to be a lull in proceedings for a while. And I noticed that when these two events took place, and by 1891, I noticed a number of our church people started to see the significance of Revelation 13. And then things started to not very much happen. And so they just sort of settled back in their ease. Very dangerous situation. Some things didn't seem to happen very much after that. John Paul, his beloved Poland, unfortunately, he wanted to see it become a rising power for the church. Unfortunately, it became, well, from his point of view, it became secular, materialistic, not what he expected. But his popularity throughout the world was no doubt not denied. He was very important in world circles. The United States? Interesting. Now it was the most prominent economic power in the world. That is, at that time. But there was no strong USSR to compete against it anymore. Those two powers were there. Now, we had something happen in the United States, though, happened after this. And it happened actually in the time of Reagan himself, because one of Reagan's speeches that he made before he was elected in 1980 was this, where he said, "If I was alone on a desert island, there would be one book that I would choose among any other to read, and that would be the Bible." Why did he say that? He said that to get the vote of the religious people in the United States to support his presidency. And he did. After his time, George W. W. Bush, the old George Bush, became president and then failed, and then Bill Clinton came. The American religious right, which has supported Reagan, now are in the doldrums a bit, but they were determined to bring back into America a force of religiosity. And we know, rather interesting, when you look at the events, how these things turned out. John Paul continued his work, but he started to get old. He was troubled with Parkinson's disease, and some of his hopes were not realized for his church. Towards the end of 2000, he issued an encyclical, just one that's significant to us. He issued an encyclical of the world needing a day of rest. Keep that in mind, day of rest. That's just before the year 2000. It was largely ignored by the European powers at the time, but, you know, they still honoured John Paul. The year 2000 becomes interesting from the other power. The religious right was looking for a candidate. And if you and I know that George Bush won the 2000 election of the United States on a very dubious margin. But he was a prominent Christian and claimed to be a committed Christian. And I have no doubt about that in his way. And now this helped the religious right, because they started to push a lot of issues through him as well. And it's interesting when you go through some of the things that he accomplished while he was in power. But in 9/11, as we all remember, it put new impetus into his election, not only his election, into his presidency. And he has now, we have now a new antagonist, Islamic extremists. And he starts to attack Afghanistan, but he made the blunder of all blunders of attacking Iraq. And in 2003, he makes the statement, "Mission accomplished." Disaster was accomplishing, actually. And this leads to disaster. But Thankfully for the support he has for the religious right, which are mostly Protestants, let me tell you, a great number of Christians in the United States, there are more Christians per population in the United States than possibly any other country in the world. And in the 2004 election, many people were questioning the going into Iraq, but because he had the support of the religious right, and it had it in our own papers that he was re-elected because of their support. Interesting. And so the Republican presidency next till 2008 was secure under George Bush. In 2005, a very important event also took place. It was the largest funeral since the days of Winston Churchill, when dignitaries from all over the world paid respects to the death of John Paul. He had achieved such prestige. Just think of it. Interesting. Revelation 13. Now, 2008 US presidency. Why am I speaking about these things? I'm just trying to emphasize the power of these two powers. John McCain and Obama. In September of 2008, John McCain, who was aiming to be president of the Republican Party, George Bush had been, because the religious right support the Republicans. Okay. John McCain made a disastrous statement. He was asked, "How is the US economy going?" He said, "It's going great." A month later, we had the global financial crisis. So Obama was elected, no trouble. In other words, he'd made a complete and utter blunder. And this is sort of breathed a bit of sigh of relief for a moment. It was a blow to the religious right, let me tell you. And the Iraq war was now a burden that the United States was sick and tired of dealing with because the cost of it and so forth was a problem, a disaster for them. We had a new leader since post 05 with Benedict in the first power. Okay. He was weaker. He was old. He was unable to handle the scandals rocking his church. Church finances, pedophile priests, homosexuality, you name it. He wasn't up to the job and he knew it. And he was at least honest enough to say, "This is time for me to pull out of this." And a new man in white was elected in 2011, Francis. It's interesting. John Paul was the first non-Italian pope elected for hundreds of years. Now one pope later, Benedict was not Italian, and either is Francis from South America. Rather interesting, isn't it? Rather interesting. Now, Francis comes to the scene. He comes with the flag, bearing the flag, bearing assault on poverty first. That's one of these things. And the need for climate change. Rather interesting. He puts himself into this block of being interested in climate change. And that'll be interesting. He reinvents himself and his church, and world leaders embrace his pontificacy. This reinvigorates something interesting of the idea that John Paul also brought in. And you can see the connection. John Paul brought in this idea of a day of rest, one in seven day of rest. Who else has done the same? None other than Francis. Only this time he has connected it with answer to global warming. You take it. If industry is not working 1 day in 7, if shops are not open in 1 day in 7, if people are resting and just going about quietly, what does that do to global warming? Great help. But what day? It's pretty obvious, isn't it? That's rather interesting. And so this is rather interesting. And then, you know, it's interesting, poverty And that in itself is an attack on the materialism of our society today, which is rather interesting. And it's these things all are set in motion. They all have some point to deal with as we as we're living in our situation. Now, Francis brings about the establishment of a unity of all religions for peace. There's a huge big meeting took place, and all these various religions, from Islam to Buddhist to Hinduism, etc., and whatnot, the Jews and so forth, all came to this big meeting, and they were, you know, it was quite a conference, etc. But he had opposition from Protestants. They didn't turn up. Rather interesting. Okay. Also, he has made an interesting announcement. He has a Vatican advisor that is making special efforts to reach and confer with Pentecostal Protestant churches in the United States. In 2014 that was started. At the end of this 2015, he also has initiated a year of grace for all Protestant churches to come back to the Mother Church by the end of 2016. Rather interesting, isn't it? Rather interesting. In 2017, it'll be 500 years since Luther nailed the 95 Theses in Wittenberg. And there is a big movement that he wants to bring about of settling that division completely so that Protestant and Catholic will be all one, or friendly, not the into two groups. It's rather interesting. Whether that takes place, as they hope, could be a different thing. And when Francis came to the United States in the end of October 2015, he again met with the Pentecostal Protestant leaders. That was one of his things. Now, this is the beginning of 2016. Okay, you have these events. What are they saying? They are saying that there are things in the offing that could be very vital and dangerous to you and I. In the offing. Now, remember this, and I've copped a bit of this from some of our own church people sometimes. They say, so-and-so, the man in white will do this, and it'll just happen like that. Doesn't happen like that. They can want, but not necessarily achieve. When God's time is there, it will happen, and until then it will not happen. But it's rather interesting. So keep those things in mind about the first power. Okay. Now the second power. We have now a US presidential race. Now you and I know we have a president, we have this prime minister race or election, and it goes about 6 weeks. Now this thing has been going on for, it'll go on for nearly 18 months, the US presidential race. Now, we've heard in the news so many times this almost farcical presidential race in the United States for the Republicans. Now remember, the Republicans have the usually danger in the fact of the religious right of the ones who would like to get more control. Now you have Donald Trump comes in. He seems a farcical person to lead a nation. And he's got so much of a vote, but he's arousing bigotry and religious prejudice in the United States like you haven't seen for a long time. And then it was rather interesting that you asked myself, will sanity prevail in this election race? Will Hillary Clinton be just able to just walk in and say, this is it, I've got it, no trouble whatsoever, thanks to Donald Trump? We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen in the next 6 months, because by that time the Republicans will have worked out who they really want. Now I noticed this in, this is Sunday, December the 27th, Herald Sun, rather interesting, is talking about the US poll will be riveting. And it makes some interesting points about it. And it speaks about the fact of Donald Trump, etc. And we don't know what will happen. I mean, I can't imagine him being President of the United States. David Cameron, who's Prime Minister of Britain, says, we don't want him here in this country. And there's a few other people thinking the same. And then it says here, Trump is still 17 points ahead of his nearest rival. That was on the 27th of December. Texas Senator Ted Cruz on 18.1%. Now, rather interesting. This is interesting. If Trump does not implode, that is, if his campaign doesn't fall apart, Cruz is looking increasingly like the man who will get the chocolates on all important, these are the issues, all important immigration issue that propelled Trump to the front of the pack. Cruz is a hardliner. Indeed, he's a handler on most things, the state of the budget. Now, notice these. A hardliner on the state of the budget, gay marriage, Obamacare, which he wants to repeal. I mean, the United States doesn't have a health care system like we have. If you're poor, you go without. There's no thing about pensioners going to the hospital and getting free Medicare. It doesn't happen in the United States. If you haven't got the money, you can go jump. But here's the interesting. His pitch to the Republican primary voters seems to be that the party doesn't need to change its conservative positions to win. Instead, it needs to double down on them in order to attract the evangelical Christians. Very interesting. Then he says, of course, this fellow makes the comment, it's unlikely that there are enough of them to swing the election. But with the second place in the polls, Cruz's message is resonating, not, of course, as much as Trump's. What he's saying here, this fellow is saying, in the United States, this next man, this next senator, who is from a migrant, actually, is liable to be the man instead of Trump. But he will play to the Christian right. Rather interesting. Whether they have enough support to beat Hillary Clinton will be rather interesting. But you can see the things that happen, that could happen and can happen in the United States. And we ask ourselves, are we seeing the fulfillment of prophecy taking place? Yes, we are. And we should be aware of it. It's not going to save us to know these events that are taking place, but it is helpful to know that we know that the prophecies are fulfilling. And even though we've had a period of quietness after the death of John Paul and the collapse of the religious right for the time being, doesn't say that it's going to end there. Now all of a sudden you've got a new man in the first power, and who knows what will happen in America as far as elections go, and far as the impact of that. Now, it's rather interesting. In the United States, the Democrats are very much in favour of climate change. That'd fit in with Francis. Rather interesting. The Republicans not so much involved with that, but they may have the support of the religious right. We do not know what will happen. Where will it all end? Might not end anywhere for a little while. We don't know. We make the fatal mistake of saying it will happen exactly like this, this, and this. We can't do that. That was the message I had last time. Don't count your chickens before they're hatched. Watch the things. Just look. Be aware. Look at the news. See what it's about. See where things are heading. Know where you stand on it. Now, where is it all heading? Well, as I said, now I'll take you back to the first quote. The world is not expecting the second coming of Christ. Is it going to come? Definitely. We've got the two powers of Revelation 13. What's the final event? We know what the final event will be that we're to look for. What is it? What's the thing we've got to watch for? And it comes from a particular source, one of the powers we've mentioned. Sunday laws. Where will it come from? Will it come from the first beast or the second beast? Revelation 13 tells us it comes from the second beast, not the first beast. Rather interesting. So it's going to happen in the United States first. It's rather interesting that, and I said that before. I don't want to go through all the business of it. I've read this quote before to you, and you possibly say, "Oh no, he don't tell me he's reading that quote again. I heard that last time." I'm going to pinpoint something for you, and I do it for a purpose. Wrong page there. Here we are, 605. I've got my marker here. I'm shaking. Would you believe it? I usually don't shake when I take a service. If you are wanting to know when Sunday laws were going to come in, this is a quote from Great Controversy, page 605, 606. And I said this to the 13th, I think, of June, the same quote. And I want you to take notice of what Ellen White says. Heretofore, that is, in the past, or up till now, those who presented the truths of the third angel's message have often been regarded as mere alarmists. In other words, that's you and I. We're fanatics. We're nutcases. Thinking about the world's going to end. Ah, rubbish. You know, so this is what a lot of people think. Their predictions, that's ours, that religious intolerance would gain control in the United States, that's what we've believed. That religious intolerance would gain control in the United States, we've believed that. And people say, it's a load of rubbish, this is the land of liberty, it couldn't happen. That church and state would unite. A church and state would unite. What is the... I'll go through that a bit. To persecute those who keep the commandments of God. Now, church and state to unite to persecute the people who keep the commandments of God have been pronounced groundless and absurd. That could not happen in the United States. That's totally ridiculous. This is a land of liberty. Our First Amendment is, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. That means church and state cannot join. Get it? That's their First Amendment of their Constitution. That's a very important point. That's a point that argues totally against it. And we've said, that will change. They will unite and they'll persecute those who keep the commandments of God, the seventh day Sabbath in particular. Now, okay. Now I want to give you what gives you the clue as to what will happen. It has been confidently declared that this land, that is United States, is not talking about Australia, could never become other than what it has been, the defender of religious freedom. Because of that First Amendment, America prides itself as a separation of church and state. This is a land of liberty, etc. Now, here's the quote, this is the part that I find, I've said it before and I want to emphasise it. And this gives us a clue. But as the question of enforcing Sunday observance, it doesn't say as the question of Sunday observance, it doesn't say that. It says, but as the question of enforcing Sunday observance, of enforcing. Notice that. There's a difference between Sunday observance and enforcing Sunday observance. In other words, you want to legislate it. You want to make it law. You want to make it law about Sunday observance. But as this question of enforcing or making law Sunday observance is widely agitated. If you agitate something, a little weeny bit of water, is that widely agitating it? You've got something that's big. It's something that's being promoted. Where's this happening? In the United States. It's not happening here. It's happening in the United States. That's what it's talking about. This is yet future. The event so long doubted and disbelieved is seen to be approaching. And the third angel message will produce an effect which it could not have had before. Now, this is yet future. If we are to see as a church agitation for wide agitation throughout the United States for enforcing Sunday observance, we know it's going to happen. And that's what she's saying. And it will have an effect on the church as it's never had before. We have presidents, you know, we've got Ted Wilson, and he's saying about reformation and revival and whatnot, and we have, you know, our own preachers and whatnot, we need to revive and whatnot. And it seems to fall on our ears, deafness, you know. It won't happen once they see this. Once it starts to see that this could be the end, then the church will be changed dramatically. And I'll read another quote, which is connected with it, which Clifford Goldstein uses in his book, Day of the Dragon, speaking about last events. Dignitaries of church and state will unite to bribe and persuade or compel all classes to honour the Sunday, right? This is after this legislation. The lack of divine authority will be supplied by oppressive enactments. In other words, it will be pressured to conform. It's not just going to say, "I'll be good boys and girls and come along and keep Sunday," like that. Political corruption is destroying love of justice and regard for truth. And even in free America, now that's what she's talking about, free America, rulers and legislators, who are rulers and legislators? They're your elected representatives. In the United States, they're two houses, like we have. The House of Representatives and the Senate. They're the elected representatives in the United States. They're the elected representatives. Rulers and legislators, they're the ones who are the rulers and legislators. In order to secure public favour, that means they'll be pressurised by public opinion. Interesting. By public opinion. Pressurised by public opinion. What is happening in Australia about gay rights? Same sort of thing. Public opinion, if it's in favour of it, it's very hard for a legislator, a member of parliament or something, to go against it because he knows he could be out. You get what I'm getting at? That's the same sort of thing that's talking about here. Then it says here, these ones in the United States, in order to secure public favour, in other words, to be in the good books with the public, will yield to the popular demand for a law enforcing Sunday observance. For law enforcing Sunday observance. So it's going to be the public who force the issue. That is the weakness of democracy. Always bear that in mind. The weakness of democracy, it's a wonderful arrangement we have that we the people elect our representatives and our governments, etc. But it's one weakness. It's what the public want, ultimately. And that's what will happen. And that will be these events that we'll take note of. And of course, we know what will happen after that. We know very well. In Revelation chapter 16, it speaks of the spirits of devils coming out of the mouth of the three powers. I should quote it from you. And it's talking about spiritualism also working. Once we have the United States brings on Sunday legislation, then the devil, who's had a storage of all his devices, will come to the fore and use nations and governments to support this Sunday legislation. And of course, we know what will happen as a result of that, etc. And God's people who are faithful will be persecuted. And then they'll be claimed as being a scourge of the earth, and they are deserving of death. And of course, we know what the consequences of that will be. There's still ultimately. If the United Nations, which possibly will be the power that says to the world, look, these people, they're violating what we want, they're causing all these natural disasters that are coming upon the world. And read Great Controversy, because she mentions about the fact of the natural disasters, especially those that happen in the United States, will force these things to come to a head. And these people, they're not doing what we ask. We've got to be keeping Sunday observance, not necessarily going to church, but these people are denying us that. They're deserving of death. And the world, of course, will think, well, in uniting against these people, these ones getting, crush them, get rid of them, we'll have all our problems solved. And of course, we know that when they make that decree, the seven last plagues will come. And you'd think that if the seven last plagues come, the people would be expecting the second coming of Christ. No, they're not. That's what the statement's made. It will come upon the world as an overwhelming disaster because they will not be expecting it. They think that this will cure the problem. And of course, what else does Satan do that overwhelmingly confirms the people in wrong? He will be manifested as Christ coming to the earth the second time. And you'll hear over the TV, Christ has come, Christ has come. But not as Christ has really come. And that will only confirm the world that they're doing the right thing. And when it comes to the sixth plague, when they're about to destroy the faithful ones, and remember, there's going to be faithful from umpteen different churches and organisations who come into the faith. When they're about to destroy God's people, darkness, the sixth plague, like in Egypt, covers the earth. And they wonder what's happening. And then light will be shone upon those groups of people, the faithful, who they wanted to destroy. Be there. And they'll start to wake up and they'll start to think, what's wrong? We made a wrong decision. What's happening? And they won't be able to do anything. God's people will be delivered. God's people will know that Christ is coming. These people will be shaking in their boots, as it were. And in Great Controversy, it tells us, and it speaks of it in Revelation 16. They'll turn upon the religious leaders, etc. And there'll be bloodshed from one end of the earth to the other. And then it will be, God's people will notice in the east a little cloud coming. The world, those who are left, will look at it with dismay and know that here it is. It's destruction of all we've hoped for. Their homes, their mansions, their enterprises, their big cities, the things that they've lived for, that they've focused all their attention on, are going to be destroyed and them with it. That's why the second coming of Christ will come upon them as an overwhelming surprise. They're not expecting it. And it will be an horrific event. But for the people of God, it will be the great relief because they were taken. Taken to be with Christ, and the dead in Christ will rise. Glorious event, but not for the rest of the world. So that's why I've made that quote. The second coming of Christ will come upon the world as an overwhelming surprise. Upon the world, but not for the people of God.